The death toll from a Russian strike on a residential apartment building in Dnipro rises.
For the moment, what we know is that 45 people have been killed.
Plus, the International Atomic Energy Agency is in Ukraine.
The mission aims to cover all of Ukraine's sensitive sites.
And later in the program, we'll hear from a U.S. congresswoman on her thoughts about supporting Ukraine, and we'll hear how Elon Musk's satellites are helping. Today is Tuesday, January 17th. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish. Ukraine insisted the West must speed up its supply of weapons, with the city of Dnipro reeling from the deadly Russian missile strike in an apartment block and Ukrainian troops under increased pressure on the Eastern Front. Reuters' Flora Bradley Watson has the details.
Tearful neighbors and local residents leave flowers and soft toys at a makeshift memorial site in Ukraine's Dnipro. More than 40 people are now confirmed to have died in Saturday's strike on an apartment building in the city, making it the deadliest single incident since the war began last February. Dozens remain missing under the rubble. Russia denies intentionally targeting civilians. This woman says she came to pay her respects to those who lost their lives. One soldier staggers away after laying down flowers. As the city reels from the attack, Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky is urging the West to, quote, speed up decision-making in supplying weapons. He insists the country needs tanks to repel Russian forces as Moscow attempts to gain the initiative in the war with an advance on the eastern Donbas region. On Monday, the UK confirmed it was going to send 14 Challenger 2 tanks and other hardware to Ukraine. Germany is under pressure to supply Leopard 2 tanks, but its government says they should only be supplied if there is agreement among Kyiv's main allies, particularly the United States. Speaking in the UK Parliament, British Defence Minister Ben Wallace urged Berlin to act.
It has been reported that obviously Poland is very keen to donate some Leopard, as is Finland, who have expressed. All of this currently relies on the German government's decisions, not only whether the Germans will supply their own Leopards, but whether or not they'll give permissions for others. I would urge my German colleagues to do that. These tanks are not offensive when they are used for defensive methods.
US Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin is set to host allies in an airbase in Germany on Friday to discuss further aid for Ukraine. A shipload of US military hardware arrived in the Danish port of Aarhus on Monday, ahead of a series of training exercises across NATO's eastern frontier countries. Russia calls its actions in Ukraine a special military operation to protect its security. Ukraine and its allies accuse Moscow of an unprovoked war to grab territory.
That's Reuters' Flora Bradley Watson reporting. America's top military officer has met his Ukrainian counterpart in person for the first time. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
Joint Chiefs Chairman Mark Milley talks regularly with General Valery Zaluzhny, but until now it was never face-to-face. Today, Milley went to a Polish military base near the Ukrainian border for their first meeting. It underscores growing ties between the two militaries at a critical time in Russia's war against Ukraine, which is nearing the one-year mark. Milley's spokesman says the general will now be able to relay Ukraine's concerns and information to NATO and other defense chiefs who will meet this week in Brussels. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Many civilians have been detained by Russian forces since the war in Ukraine began. The AP's Charles Della Desma has the story.
Many Ukrainians have been detained by Russian forces since the war in Ukraine began. The Ukrainians are languishing in jails for months without charges as their relatives seek to find out what's happened to them. Some have been deemed prisoners of war, even though they never took part in the fighting. Others remain in a sort of legal limbo, Ukraine's top human rights organization says. It has received requests concerning around 900 civilians seized by Russia, and more than half are still in captivity. One Ukrainian human rights official puts the number even higher. He says his office has received inquiries concerning more than 20,000 civilian hostages, as he puts it, detained by Russian forces. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
It's a busy day for our friend and colleague at the Associated Press. Charles de Ledesma is back with another piece. This time it's about the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, and its presence in Ukraine.
IAEA Director General Rafael Grossi, while visiting the Pivdano-Ukrainsk power plant, says the mission aims to cover all of Ukraine's sensitive sites.
This is a part of a set of missions. We are starting today here at South Ukraine. We are going to be continuing in Rivne, Khmelnytsky next week, and also Chernobyl.
Grossi adds, a group of experts will stay behind in each location to work with Ukrainian hosts.
We are leaving now a group of experts who are going to be staying here permanently.
Zaporizhia nuclear plant, Europe's largest, was taken over by Russian forces in the first months of the war and remains under their control. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
And now to the scene of the deadly apartment building attack in Dnipro with the Associated Press's Ben Thomas.
Emergency crews searching an apartment block in the southeastern city of Dnipro, destroyed Sunday by a Russian missile strike. The multi-story building housed some 1,700 people, and the reported death toll puts it among the deadliest attacks on Ukrainian civilians in months. That according to the Associated Press Frontline War Crimes Watch. Residents say the apartment tower did not house any military facilities. Staring at the scene, Irina Skripnik tells AP reporters, all of us could be in that place. The Kremlin claims it doesn't target residential buildings, but world leaders are condemning the strike. The UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres saying attacks against civilians and civilian infrastructure violate international humanitarian law and must end immediately. I'm Ben Thomas.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. A high-level delegation of American diplomats visited Kyiv on Monday. We get the latest from Anna Chernikova.
Yeah, so yesterday, a high-level U.S. delegation was in Kyiv. This delegation met with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and also other Ukrainian officials. So the head of the delegation was Wendy Sherman, Deputy Secretary of State, and also two other members, Dr. Colin Call, Undersecretary for Policy at the Department of Defense, and Jonathan Feiner, a Principal Deputy National Security Advisor. The main discussion was about equipment and military support for Ukraine, especially in light of the latest attack and latest tragedies that happened in Dnipro. And Ms. Sherman, she said that the key reason for this delegation's visit to Ukraine was to deliver a message of support, first of all, and of course to express admiration to Ukrainian resiliency and bravery, as she said. She said that it was really important for them to hear directly from President Zelensky, from also other top Ukrainian officials, and also Ukrainian citizens. Also, she mentioned that U.S. will continue to monitor Russians' actions, and she repeated the words President Biden said previously that U.S. will stay with Ukraine as long as it takes. Also, of course, there were a lot of discussions about possible new weapons that Ukraine could get. And also some, you know, journalists and my colleagues were asking about, you know, this import that Russia gets from Iran, from North Korea and other countries because they don't have enough of their own equipment. So basically, Mr. Karl said that U.S. is working to provide air defense equipment first of all, but also what he mentions that second priority would be armored and mobile capability necessary to help Ukraine to maintain momentum on the battlefield. And of course, here we talked a lot, and there were a lot of questions about tanks. And basically, he made such, you know, a remark that that this Ramstein meeting, which is happening in a couple of days, will actually give the final answers regarding the tanks. And it looks like it would be a positive answer to Ukraine and positive decision for Ukraine. Probably last but not least, Mr. Feiner also said that U.S. strongly believes there must be accountability for everything Russia has done in Ukraine, because also one of my colleagues asked about how recognizing Russia as terrorist state. He says that U.S. Has addressed already many Russian actions in Ukraine as war crimes, and he made, you know, this highlight that this is even more important than, you know, putting a label of terrorist state. But again, as we can see that war crimes are considered and war crimes are under the investigation. And U.S. side, of course, helps a lot. U.S. experts helps a lot Ukrainians to put these war crimes and the list of these war crimes for the future investigations in order. So basically, my question was, of course, about air defense, and also was about general feeling that the delegation had during their time in Kyiv, in Ukraine. And they said, in terms of their feelings, they said that it was really, really great experience to be in Kyiv and to see how Kyiv is living, how people are living their lives, how they work, how they help their families, help army. And on the other hand, it's a very dynamic city living its life. And on the other hand, basically, you can see, as Mr. As Mr. Cole put it, basically you can feel the war in the air and that this is a country at war.
Changing gears a little bit, we've heard a few reports out of Dnipro earlier in the program. Is there, what's the latest information, the newest numbers you can tell us?
Yeah, so today after more than 3 days, rescue operation and searching operation is finally over officially. For the moment, what we know is that 45 people have been killed. And this is the number that was confirmed by the local authorities and by the rescue service. So out of these 45, there are 6 children. And unfortunately, today in the morning, it was information about 5 children. And just a couple of minutes ago, we got confirmation of another child, the victim of this attack. Also, around 15 people, 15 bodies are still unidentified, and also around 20 people are still considered missing. So, unfortunately, this numbers could change, but for the moment, 45 killed and 79 injured.
Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
Marcy Kaptur is a congresswoman representing the 9th District of Ohio in the U.S. House of Representatives. Recently, she spoke via Zoom with Natalka Pisnya of VOA's Russian service.
So, do you think it's a possibility Ukrainians will be receiving more Patriots in the future?
I think that one of the most important aspects of any complicated system like that is proper training of those who operate it. And so it has to happen progressively. You can't expect miracles overnight. And but I think your military in Ukraine and the U.S. military understand what it takes. I've been extremely impressed with Ukraine's military. The whole world has. I don't know that anyone anticipated that after 11 months that the Ukraine military is not only standing, it's winning. And it's taken back territory, and it is fighting for territory that was assumed to be back under the Russian mantle after they took it after 2014. So there is a great deal of confidence in Ukraine's military and the Ukrainian people. And I know the world will find a way to help Ukraine win.
Next, Natalka asked what the United States could do to deter Russia.
All right, well, I think if you look at the votes in the United Nations, Russia is now a pariah state. It isn't just the United States that supports Ukraine, but the vast number of countries in the world. You will always have detractors. And that's true in our country, right? Some people don't really understand. They've lived a very narrow life. They don't even know what the North Atlantic Treaty Organization is about. They don't understand our common alliance and the history of the United States of America, which is a very young country. So we have some people in our country who really don't understand, but we have many more people that do understand. So, for example, one of our large organizations is Rotary in our country, and they are collecting humanitarian goods from people who aren't Ukrainian-American or come from Europe. They are positively acting in ways that support Ukraine. We have thousands and thousands of people who are doing that, doctors who are helping to treat those who've been wounded and those who are displaced. So the American people, we have both, you know, the governmental power, private sector power, and then there's personal power that people themselves have to do something that matters to help Ukraine. And they're trying to find their way to do that. So I am very confident that that Liberties Alliance will hold. The Canadians, our closest neighbors in part of America that I live in, they are that's the second largest Ukrainian population in the world in Canada. They are completely committed to Ukraine. And one of my greatest victories this year from my part of the country was working with Americans who were collecting humanitarian items for hospitals in Ukraine, and we were able to move these shipments very quickly into hospitals in Ukraine. And I'm very proud of the American people for collecting medical items, tourniquets and so forth that are helping the military. There's a lot happening that isn't reported, showing the support of people, I say, in the street, in the communities of our countries around the world that support Ukraine. So I think that good will overpower evil, and that we will win, but it takes our persistence. And we appreciate the president of Ukraine, President Zelensky, coming to Congress and addressing Congress at such a difficult time in Ukraine's history. What an effort that took. And that has its own message of strength and perseverance that has an enormous impact on the American people.
Do you think it's a chance that sides from both sides of the aisle in the House would be able to find some sort of a middle ground on how to support Ukraine and deter Russia?
We have already found that. If you look at the votes for Ukraine, they're overwhelming. I serve on the Defense Committee. Both Republicans and Democrats support the funding for Ukraine. And that is why when we passed the bill in December for funding our own country, there were significant funds there for Ukraine in several accounts, not just the Department of Defense, but other departments of our government that are trying to help Ukraine through the generosity of the American people. So we are very committed. And some of these voices that are not in support or challenging, we operate by majority rule. And the majority in both parties supports Ukraine. So there, you know, sometimes in life, right, there's just some people that will never agree. And we have to expect that. But I think Ukraine should remain confident that the American people fully support them.
That's U.S. Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur of Ohio speaking with Natalka Pisnya of VOA's Russian service. When Russia invaded Ukraine, the military and private citizens started using Elon Musk's SpaceX Starlink satellite internet connections. Providing high-speed internet connections in situations with no ground-based infrastructure, Starlink became a key to Ukraine's resistance. From Kyiv, Miroslava Gungadze has the story.
In this apartment on the outskirts of Kyiv, engineer Oleg Kutkov started testing Elon Musk's SpaceX Starlink internet connection long before the war. The thousands of small satellites that makes up Starlink were first sent into space in 2019. Kutkov, a self-proclaimed space nerd who immigrated to Kyiv after Russians occupied Crimea in 2014, was fascinated by the newest space technology.
I started to follow this project from the beginning, when it just launched. So I decided that it would be nice to try to receive the signal from Starlink, just to receive and maybe to analyze to see what is this.
Starlink doesn't require any ground infrastructure, just a small satellite dish and a receiver device to access high-speed internet. Starlink was not yet available in Ukraine in 2021, so Kutkov bought a device on eBay and started experimenting. 2 days after Russia invaded Ukraine on February 24th, Mykhailo Fyodorov, Ukraine's Minister of Digital Transformation, tweeted to Elon Musk. Elon Musk replied to him within hours. Within days, dark gray boxes with small flat dishes began to arrive in Ukraine. By May, around 150,000 people were using the system.
I didn't realize that in February or in March, maybe 1 week or two, but then my messages exploded, basically, because everyone is writing me about Starlink. People ask it how to connect, what that should do, and so on. So I realized that it's very important for people, especially on affected regions where they lost all the communication.
Soon after, the Ukrainian military started using the SpaceX technology on a massive scale. Starlink became a window to the world for soldiers on the front line and a key component in military operations. Kutkov thinks that even SpaceX could not predict how useful Starlink would be to the war effort.
I know that they used Starlink for sharing military data to synchronize some coordinates, hit point, and so on.
Here at the northern border of Ukraine and elsewhere, Starlink provides the most stable communication connection for military operations, military officer Oleksiy Shevchuk says.
There are no alternatives for Starlink at the moment. It is our eyes and ears, and we rely on it greatly.
Although the Russian forces are fully aware of Starlink's capabilities, it is almost impossible to block its signal.
In modern war, because our enemies has some technologies that can obstruct communication, regular communication, like radios, phones, and so on. So, yeah, Starlink is something that they can't interrupt, because this is a satellite technology that uses some unique features, so they just can't do anything with this. So yes, this is I think this is why it's so important, because it's very hard to interrupt this communication, plus it's very hard to locate a Starlink terminal.
For almost a year, Kutkov's apartment balcony office has become a Starlink repair shop where soldiers from the front line come for help. Kutkov fixes Starlink receivers and dishes, sometimes with bullet holes in them. An example of how private citizen can help the war effort.
I do it for free in my spare time. Yeah, because I have my job that I... my primary job that I'm doing in the daytime, and in the nighttime I'm doing all my Starlink repair and support work.
For his effort, Kutkov ended up with Ukrainian President Zelensky on the cover of Time magazine. And Starlink is not the only Elon Musk company technology Oleg adopted. Almost daily, he jumps in his Tesla to drive to the postal office to send back the fixed equipment to soldiers. He sees it as his way to serve and hopes one day to return home to Crimea. Borislava Gongadze, VOA News, Kyiv.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media, just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish. We'll be right back.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.